Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori on this Saturday morning, April 10. How are we doing this morning? So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning from 7 to 8 right here on WLIW 88.3 FM. You can hear us live online at wliw.org/radio. Each show is archived on my website at anneliguori.com and distributed on my podcasts. So it is Masters weekend. Yes, the azaleas are in full bloom and the first major on the calendar is in progress only 5 months after the Masters was played in November of 2020, rescheduled last year, obviously due to the pandemic. We are taping this show on Thursday as round one is in progress, but the storylines coming into this Masters are many. Dustin Johnson trying to become the first player to repeat as Masters champion since Tiger Woods did it back in 2002. Jordan Spieth, the 2015 Masters champion, winning his first tournament last week since 2017 when he won the Open Championship. He won it in his home state, the Valero Texas Open last week, and suddenly Jordan Spieth became one of the favorites here at Augusta National this year. Spieth saying it was great to get that monkey off his back and now everyone can chill out, he said. He was struggling big time for a while. And last September at the U.S. Open at Wingfoot, Spieth even said he was standing on the tee and had no idea where the ball was going to go. And that is not a good feeling. But, you know, he grinds it out. He never gives up. And he came in to these Masters with a win the week before. Brooks Koepka surprised everyone by even showing up last Sunday at Augusta National. He had knee surgery on his right knee only 3 weeks ago for a dislocated kneecap and for ligament damage. And he admitted that, you know, walking downhill is very challenging. And also when the ball is below his feet, it's very, very tough for him. He can't bend his knee at all. And, you know, the elevation at Augusta National is very dramatic. So I expect it will be challenging for Brooks Koepka to even walk the course. As of Tuesday, he said he needed 3 hours of therapy on his knee back then. Rory McIlroy trying to capture the career Grand Slam. Well, he continues to struggle. At the time of taping the show on Thursday, in round one, Rory McIlroy had bogeyed 5 of 7 holes. Holes 5, 6, 7. He actually birdied 8. He bogeyed 9 and bogeyed 11. He has recently reconnected with coach Pete Cowan and said before the Masters started that he's trying to take the big numbers out of play and trying to be more in control. Bryson DeChambeau, just bombing it off the tee, was the favorite back in November at the Masters. But back then, he tied for 34th, scrambling after wayward tee shots. He said earlier this week he has to hit the ball in the correct quadrants on the green. Phil Mickelson, at 50 years of age, playing in his 29th Masters. And how many more for three-time champ Phil Mickelson? He's always so much fun to watch and such a great interview. Lee Westwood, almost 49 years old, coming into these Masters playing lights out. But on Thursday, Lee struggled big time right off the bat. One of the highlights of the week was Lee Alder, the first black man to compete in the Masters back in 1975, joining Gary Player and Jack Nicklaus as the honorary starters on Thursday morning. Lee Alder, he is 86 years old. He wasn't actually able to hit the tee shot, but it was historic that Lee Alder was recognized in this way, that he was there. And he's had a big week. He received an honorary doctorate degree from Payne College in Augusta. And Payne College and Augusta National are establishing 2 scholarships in his name and starting a women's golf team. Lee Alder's message is, the game of golf belongs to everyone. And that is so true. Congratulations, Lee Alder. Recognition long overdue. This morning, we will learn about the history of Augusta National and the Masters with the foremost authority on Bobby Jones, Sid Matthew. Of course, Bobby Jones being involved with both Augusta National and the Masters Tournament. Sid has authored many books on Bobby Jones, countless articles, and wrote and produced the documentary, The Life and Times of Bobby Jones. And you'll also hear a conversation I had with Katie Rudolph, who coaches amateur golfer Megha Gane, who was invited to play in the second Augusta National Women's Amateur, which was held last week. Megha Gane did not make the cut. The championship round was actually played Saturday at Augusta National. The first two rounds were played at Champions Retreat in Augusta. But Megha Gane has played in the Drive, Chip, and Putt National Finals at Augusta National four times. And at the young age of 17, she's been to Augusta National five times. So just an incredible track record for Megha Gane. And Katie Rudolph, her coach, joins us and also talks about the First Tee. She is COO of First Tee Metropolitan New York. Very impressive in her own right. Sports Interview with Anne Liguori is brought to you by Dune Jewelry and my Hamptons Rope Collection. Savor the memories with sand from your favorite beach or golf course in timeless pieces for men and women. DuneJewelry.com. That's D-U-N-E, jewelry.com. And by Peak Vision Sunglasses. Zero distortion, unmatched clarity, change your game. Peak Vision, P-E-A-K, vision.com. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and my guest is Sid Matthew, who's written 10 books, countless articles, wrote and produced a documentary, The Life and Times of Bobby Jones, and continues to research and share information about the greatest amateur golfer in history, Bobby Jones. Good morning, Sid. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, everyone.
So Bobby Jones, winner of the Grand Slam of Golf in 1930, he co-founded Augusta National Golf Club in 1931, played in his first Masters tournament in 1934. And, you know, just the whole history of the Masters and of Augusta National is just so fascinating to me. And I understand that Augusta National was organized and built at the height of the Depression. Certainly not an ideal time to start anything, right, Sid Matthew?
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, the entire country was flat on its back. They had food lines that stretched around cities. Nobody had any money. Golf courses were folding. They weren't building golf courses. They were closing them down. And it was just the worst time for anybody, especially to come up with cash to build a golf course. Just to give you an idea, they paid the laborers at Augusta 10 cents an hour. They rounded it up to a dollar a day because they said that they worked from can see in the morning to can't see at night, can to can't. And so they earned a dollar a day is how much the laborers earned. And, of course, Alistair McKenzie, who was the ultimate designer of Augusta, originally charged them $10,000 for his architect's fee. He realized that that was never going to happen. It was not going to get paid. So he reduced it to $5,000, and the club couldn't even pay that. They never really even paid McKenzie the full amount of his reduced architect's fee. So you can imagine they reorganized twice. They didn't declare bankruptcy formally. But the initial partnership that they formed folded. They folded that into a corporation. It folded as well, became dissolved and insolvent. So, you know, Augusta really was a miracle. And, of course, today you'd never know it because it's self-sustaining. But it had a very tumultuous origin.
Wow, that's just unbelievable that they just struggled to pay the bills. And in 1934, they came up with the idea of hosting a tournament that they thought would generate revenue and publicity. And it was originally called the Augusta National Invitational. And one item that I read recently just fascinates me, the fact that they got the international media on board to cover this invitational by paying for their hotel between New York and Augusta and by putting the media up in a hotel?
That's right. Graylin Rice was the premier sports writer. His column was Sportlight. And he got all of the sports writers in America who were covering the Grapefruit League, Baseball League in South Florida and Miami and South Florida to come up to Augusta and stop on their way north in April to attend this Augusta National Invitation Tournament. Bob and Cliff tried to get an Open Championship or a USGA Championship, couldn't do it, and because they were such an upstart organization. So Graylin Rice was smart enough to realize we need to get the international market involved and patrons from there. And so the word was that all of the British writers, if they could make it to New York, then Cliff Roberts would arrange for a train to carry them to Augusta, and they got to cover the tournament. They held a dinner for them, which is still held every year at the club. And so something happened in 1935 that was called the shot heard round the world, and that was when Gene Sarazen shocked everybody by holding a double eagle on number 15 to tie Craig Wood and then beat him in the playoff. So that article was published by everybody on both sides of the pond and made the Masters famous.
Wow. That's a great story. So how did Bobby Jones connect with Clifford Roberts?
Well, Clifford Roberts was a New York financier, and he got a group of New Yorkers together. They wanted to go south to play golf, and they selected Augusta because it was 10 degrees cooler than Atlanta, warmer than Atlanta during the winter, cooler in the summer. And so they came down in the 20s on Greyhound buses and Bill Robertson's airplane, the New York Herald Tribune publisher's airplane, and they all played golf every year. And there was a nursery called Berkman's Nursery that was a internationally famous nursery, and it was purchased by Commodore Stoltz, who was a real estate developer and hotel owner. And Stoltz went broke in the stock market crash of 1929. His hotel in Miami, Fruitlands, went broke. And so he folded up his development because nobody was going to buy a house on a golf course. And Walton Marshall was head of Bonaire Vanderbilt Hotel. They had the Bonaire Vanderbilt in Augusta, and they had a Vanderbilt Hotel in New York. And so he saw the property, showed it to Cliff Roberts. Cliff Roberts proposed that Bob come look at it toward building the world's wonder inland golf course, now Augusta. And Bob went out on the veranda. It was the old Redmond indigo plantation before the Berkmans bought it. It had every flowering plant known to man there. And Bob went up on the veranda and looked out over this expanse of land, and he said, "Perfect. It looks like that this land is perfectly designed for a golf course. In fact, it looks like a golf course has already been laid upon it." So he then signed off on the deal, and then they had to try to raise the money. Of course, nobody had any money. Cliff Roberts, interestingly, was tipped off by the president of the Chicago National Bank, Melvin Traylor, that the stock market was going to crash. It was destined to crash. And he cautioned Cliff to get his clients out of the market, but Cliff didn't do it. And so all of his clients went broke, and he went broke. But Alfred Severn Borne was the heir of the Singer Sewing Machine fortune. He posted $25,000 toward the $100,000 design construction fee. And they got Wilton Marshall to kick in another $25,000. Bob Jones kicked in five. They got several other people. Harry Atkinson was head of Georgia Power, now Southern Company. He was the only Atlantian to join the original Augusta organization. And they then had enough money, to start construction. They then needed to try to come up with money to operate the club. They couldn't even operate it. A lot of people turned down memberships. Bob's best friend, Watts Gunn, said, "Bob, you know I can't afford to pay anything right now. I'm broke." And so they decided maybe if we got a tournament, we could get enough money from the gate to help operate the club. And, of course, 1934, the gate did not come in. The sports writers showed up to make it famous, but the gate didn't come in. And Mr. Bourne had to reach in his pocket and come up with the $5,000 purse to pay the first tournament. So they continued to struggle, for the next several years. It helped when Gene Sarazen hit the shot around the world. A lot of people started to say, "Hey, what's going on in Augusta?" And they started to attract people to come. And then, of course, you came into the exciting years of Sam Snead and Ben Hogan, and then the sports writers really started to catch on fire. The economy turned around with FDR's New Deal, and then the club started to take off.
Wow, what a fascinating history, just to ever imagine that they, Augusta National struggled in the early days. It's almost unimaginable, but it was the Depression. So what was Bobby Jones and Clifford Roberts' relationship like? Because from what I've read, Clifford Roberts was a very difficult guy to like. And did they get along, Bobby Jones and Clifford Roberts?
Well, Cliff and Bob got along fine. Bob was, the beloved hero that we all know. Cliff was a very stern businessman, and he was very persnickety. And Bob allowed him to try to do what he could to keep the club alive financially, which was a real challenge. And, of course, Cliff made a lot of people mad because he stiffed a lot of people. He didn't have the money to pay them, including Alistair McKenzie. McKenzie never got paid. Cliff and Bob, got along fine to try to make the club survive. They did get their financial ox in the ditch several times. And, of course, there's a lot of stories told about the evolving relationship of Bob and Cliff. Cliff was chairman of the tournament. Bob was president of the club. And that was the demarcation between their roles. They also formed a Coca-Cola consortium of 40 members of the National with R.W. Woodruff of Coca-Cola. It was called Joe Roberts. They had three Coca-Cola bottling plants in South America, Paraguay, Uruguay, and Argentina. And the story was from Morton Hodgson, R.W. Woodruff's nephew, used to tell the story about Bob flying down with Cliff to check on the South American Coke companies. And one time, Morton got on an elevator, a foreign national got on the elevator. Bob Jones didn't speak Spanish, but he said, "Buenos dias." Cliff Roberts said nothing. So when they got off the elevator, Bob put nose to nose with Cliff and said, "Cliff, that was rude. You know I don't speak Spanish, but when that foreign national got on, Morton said Buenos dias, I said Buenos dias, and you were so rude you didn't say anything." And Cliff pushed him back and said, "Bob," he said, "you're right, I don't speak Spanish. And if I said Buenos dias, that man would have assumed that I spoke fluent Spanish. He would have responded to something I would not have been able to answer. We would have had an international incident on our hands. So hell no, I won't say Buenos dias." So gives you a pretty good idea of what he was like. Later they had to come up with some money, so Cliff arranged for Bob to play with a Citibank officer, Doug Smith, at Blind Brook in New York. And so they, Doug Smith was a young bank officer, and he was so excited. I'm going to play golf with Bobby Jones. So they played nine holes, and Bob said, Doug, would you like to come into the locker room for a libation? And he said, oh, golly, I just played with Bob Jones, and now I'm going to go have a drink with him and talk about the deal. So they talked about the deal, got the deal right, and Bob said, I just have to run this by Cliff. So they brought a phone into the locker room, and Jones had to hold the phone about 6 inches away from his ear. And on the other end, Doug could hear, no, 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 I'm not doing that. No, 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 no. And Doug was so embarrassed for Bobby that when Bob hung up the phone, Doug said, what did Mr. Roberts say? And Bob said, Cliff said that'd be fine.
Yay, so Bobby Jones.
Yeah, so you could imagine that they needled each other. And, you know, later... it got to be a strained relationship. Bob's health failed him. You know, he went from one cane to two canes, one leg brace to another leg brace because of the syringomyelia nervous condition that reduced him down to, you know, a shell of a man. Mm-hmm. And Bob, Cliff was so embarrassed for him. He didn't want him to appear on the Masters program for the trophy presentation in 68. And, of course, that created a little schism between them. Bob Jones the Fourth talks today about kind of a feud that occurred between Cliff and his dad, Bob Jones the Third. When he was vice president, he was supposed to be president of the club, and Cliff did not think that Bob Jones the Third measured up to his father. It was a very high expectation. So Cliff created Bob Jones as president in perpetuity, presumably, according to Bob Jones the Fourth, to preclude his father from ascending to the presidency of Augusta. So wow. You could imagine that there was a little bit of antagonism there, and that kind of carried over to the end.
Cliff right. Roberts strikes again.
Well, he was a rough and tough fellow, and Charlie Yates always loved him and thought that he was tough but irascible, and that he was, the original dictator. Democracies are good for governments. Dictatorships are good for corporations. That's their motto. And they lived it. And of course, had Cliff not been the iron-fisted ruler that he was, perhaps we would not have an Augusta today in the shape that it's in.
We continue our talk with Sid Matthew, the foremost authority on Bobby Jones. Bobby Jones obviously winning the Grand Slam of Golf back in 1930. He co-founded Augusta National Golf Club in 1931. He also co-founded the Masters Tournament and played in his first Masters Tournament in 1934. It's such interesting history, Sid Matthew. And how did you become so connected to Bobby Jones?
Well, of course, I grew up in Dunedin, Florida, which was the home of the PGA National from about 1938 to 1963 when they moved to J.D. MacArthur in South Florida. But I got to know a lot of the old golfers. I just thought they were tired, old, grumpy guys. And turns out that they were some of the most famous people in the business. And later... my law firm litigated against Bobby Jones' law firm in Atlanta over a series of products liability cases. And I was always up in their offices taking depositions and talking to their partners and really became interested in Bob Jones more as a person, you know, a lawyer. He was a businessman. He was a writer. He was such a multifaceted, fascinating character. that I started to, you know, ask about him. And you talk to some of his partners and they say, well, you should have talked to old Fred, but he's dead. And you should have talked to old Joe, but he's dead. And they had one foot in the bucket. Nobody was capturing their oral histories. So I got up a TV crew and about three times a year captured their stories and then cobbled them together in a documentary called Life and Times of Bobby Jones. And my golfing buddy at the Royal and Ancient, Sir Sean Connery, narrated it. And we broadcasted 8 years before the Sunday round of the Masters. So that really is kind of a capsule of how I got started.
Wait a second. Your buddy, Sean Connery? That is extraordinary. And isn't it just extraordinary, Sid, that through the years, all these years later, after, you know, Bobby Jones and Cliff Roberts, you know, created this Masters and Augusta National with Alistair McKenzie, that it still has this kind of Bobby Jones legacy that, you know, it's still very polite. There's, you know, when you go, they're patrons, not spectators. They're, you know, everybody's so polite and very knowledgeable golf spectators at that, right? And it's just,
yeah,
it really is elegant.
When you go to Augusta, you have your, you're on your Sunday manners.
That's right.
You know, you of course, if you're not, then there you're going to forfeit your tickets. That's another reason. But you want to be respectful of the property and the event and the competitors and, you know, I think that that's why it's heads and shoulders above almost any other event, because you appreciate that this is a special occasion, and I think that's been borne out through the years.
The hallowed grounds of Augusta National, so beautiful, so special. Now the hottest ticket in town, but when it first started, it was, they hardly got it together, right? They hardly could even raise enough money to have an Augusta National. They started in the Depression.
Well, yeah, remember the Depression hit in 29 and was in full swing by 1930, 31. It wasn't until FDR pulled, you know, the iron out of the fire that they were able to get the economy back. And golf courses were folding. They were not starting new golf courses. You know, the organizers of Augusta were thought to be crazy because they were fixing to spend $100,000 building a brand new golf course that nobody would go to. And, you know, they found that it was extremely difficult. They had a hard time coming up with the money. And then they were trying to figure out how to pay for the upkeep. And they thought maybe we can hold a major tournament and make some expense money from the gate.
And I know, Sid, that Augusta National was the inspiration of Bobby Jones and Alistair McKenzie, even though Bobby Jones greatly admired Donald Ross. And I understand that you have done more research and have discovered that Alistair McKenzie was not Bobby Jones' first choice as far as golf course designers go.
Yeah, you know, Bob Jones knew that the leading golf architects would have to join with him to help design Augusta. Ultimately, Alistair McKenzie was selected for the job, but he was not the first pick. Most everybody has sort of concluded that Alistair McKenzie was the logical and only choice. But actually, we are announcing this week that Bob Jones actually had another British architect who was his first choice. And unfortunately, the Depression separated him from his company and his partnership with his partners, and he wasn't able to follow through on the job. But you know, Alistair McKenzie appreciated that Bob Jones was really his co-equal in designing Augusta. And he said, you know, Bob Jones has got an extraordinary knowledge of almost every important golf hole in every important golf course in the world. And he has drawn on that knowledge to come up with not exact copies of the holes of St. Andrews, but with the same shot values and with the same challenges and with the same benefits. And so McKenzie gave equal credit to Bob Jones for, you know, the ultimate product of Augusta, and that's what we see today. But the main theme that Bob Jones wanted to convey in designing Augusta really was St. Andrews. He once said that if he was to be sentenced to play on only one golf course in his entire life, for the rest of his life, it would be St. Andrews. Because the essence of golf is adventure. That's why we play golf. Adventure is born of variety and all kinds of choices, and that you never play the same golf course 2 days in a row. And that defines St. Andrews. St. Andrews, there's always a way to play St. Andrews, but it never is the obvious way. You know, every time you play it, it is different.
But he didn't like St. Andrews at first. He was very frustrated by his play at St. Andrews.
He didn't understand it because, you know, the traditional golf was played straight ahead. And it was, we call it a penal strategy of golf, which was many are the broad roads that lead to destruction. Narrow is the road that leads to salvation. And that you should hit it straight down the middle, straight on the green, and two putt or one putt. And that should be the way that you play golf. But if you hit it, if you sin, you know, it almost has religious connotations of the Reformation. That if you hit it, if you sin and you're offline, then you hit into a pot bunker. And there's no way you can get out of there onto the green. You just have to splash out, usually sideways, and it costs you a shot. You're penalized. You're punished. And then you have to seek redemption. In the 20s and late 30s, the strategic school of golf course design came on, and they shallowed out the bunkers so that if you did misplay a shot, that you still could redeem yourself by an extraordinary shot out of the bunker. And that there was redemption and forgiveness, and that makes the golf more enjoyable to the player instead of just beating your brains out and punishing you. St. Andrews will do that, but it also offers the other strategic school. For instance, in 1930, playing against Sid Roper in the second round, Bob Jones was in cottage bunker on the sixth hole, and he hit it in his deep bunker, but he holed out from cottage bunker. You know, ordinarily you would not be able to do that on one of the old-style golf courses that had pot bunkers, you know, that are about 6 feet deep and you need a shovel to get the ball out. But in 1921, that's exactly what happened to Bob Jones. You know, he was playing with Jock Hutchison, the eventual winner, and he was, you know, shooting around par. And then he came to the third round, and he went out in 46. He got into every bunker. He got into every trouble spot. Went out in 46, was disgusted with himself, and then he came to the 11th hole, and he hit it into hill bunker, and he made about three or four passes at the ball and couldn't get it out of the bunker. He had to pick it up and put it in his pocket. And he told the scorer, "I quit." He handed his scorecard to him. He tore it into shreds and threw it in the Eden River. But he did not walk off the golf course like everybody wrote. Instead, he asked his caddy for his driver. He drove off number 12, finished the round, and then even though he had withdrawn from the tournament, they allowed him to play the next day, and he shot even par. He would have been second low amateur to Roger Weathered, the playoff loser, but for the what he called the most inglorious failure of his golfing life, quitting. And, of course, the British press roundly criticized him, saying, well, Bobby Jones is just a boy and an ordinary boy after all. You know, and the British believe never give up, never give up, never, ever, ever give up. Whatever you do, finish the match, never give up. And, of course, he violated rule number one, and he then realized, I can't play against my competitors. I've got to play against old man Parr. And that's when he figured it out, and he resolved that his temper would not get the better of him.
And how old was he at that point, Sid?
He was 19. That was in 1921. He was born in 02, so he's 19 years old.
Wow, so he learned a lot, a big lesson back then.
He did come back to Great Britain in 1926, and he won the Open. And the British said, he is now our Bobby. He's our hero. He may be an American, but anybody who comes back from that kind of adversity, we will lift him on our shoulders, and he will be our hero. And, you know, he came back in 1927 and defended his title at St. Andrews and became a citizen of the Royal Borough of St. Andrews in 1958, which is tantamount to citizenship. The only person that previous American that had previously received that honor was Benjamin Franklin in 1759. So imagine Jones' name is linked to Ben Franklin, which
unbelievable.
Is extraordinary in the British history.
Great story, Sid Matthew. We'll have to have you on again. You are an encyclopedia of knowledge when it comes to Bobby Jones and the Masters, the Augusta National, and St. Andrews, and how great it is for you to be a member of the RNA. That's extraordinary. We'll have to devote another show just to that subject. Sid Matthew, thanks so much for joining me, and I look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Okay, thank you so much for letting me ventilate a little bit.
My pleasure.
Talk soon.
Thank you. Sports Interview with Anne Liguori is brought to you by Dune Jewelry and my Hamptons Rope Collection. Savor the memories with sand from your favorite beach or golf course in timeless pieces for men and women. DuneJewelry.com. That's D-U-N-E Jewelry.com. And by Peak Vision Sunglasses. Zero distortion, unmatched clarity, change your game. Peak Vision, P-E-A-K Vision.com. Katie Rudolph coaches Megha Gane, who played in the Augusta National Women's Amateur this past week. Katie is also the COO of First Tee Metropolitan New York, and she joins us right now. Katie, welcome to Talking Golf.
Hey, good morning, Ann. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. So delighted you can join us. And boy, your student, I mean, her resume already, she's only, what, 17. She's a four-time drive, chip, and putt national finalist. In 2019, she finished second place in her age division. She's played in five junior events in 2020, recorded four top three finishes. I mean, it just goes on and on. She was the 2018 AJGA champion. Boy, I think the most impressive stat, though, is she's already appeared at Augusta National, what, five times?
Yeah, this was her fifth time.
How did you initially connect with her?
Well, I've been her coach since she was seven, and I first met her. She was participating in a LPGA USGA girls golf group clinic, and I saw her there, and I saw her hit the ball, and I immediately asked her if I could go find her dad, and I needed to know more. So even from her first swings that she was making at seven, I knew that there was something special.
Wow, age seven. Good for her. And then so you brought her over to the First Tee, the Metropolitan chapter?
Yeah, so from there, I was already teaching at the First Tee over in Newark. And it was just going to be easier if she was just enrolled into the program so that I could be with her more often. And once we enrolled her, she realized she absolutely loved the first tee. It wasn't even about me anymore. She was showing up because she just thought the first tee was so cool and she had so much fun with all of her friends there. So she's been a first tee participant ever since.
So did her parents get her into it at 7? I mean, that's a great age to start.
I think they were just trying different things. She was doing, just like every parent, where you dabble in all kinds of different sports. And luckily, I saw her when she was trying golf and asked her if she could continue with it.
So tell us about your experience this week with Meg. Take us through the whole week.
I have to say, women's golf there is a new bar that has been set in women's amateur golf. This week was unbelievably perfect from every single aspect that you look at it from the obviously the playing the most iconic golf course in the world, but even the hospitality, the every detail of the week was laid out for you. You had to do nothing but just play golf here, and the golf course is in absolutely perfect condition. So from the beginning, though, I got here on Monday, and I am exhausted. I can't wait to go home.
I bet.
It's been 24/7 since we got here, but I have no complaints. It was just amazing.
So you went to a dinner, right? Or did just the competitors go?
So just Mega gets to go, and then she took her mom with her, and they came back raving with, you just can't believe what's inside. And, you know, they got to go into the clubhouse and go to all the different areas inside of the clubhouse and things like that. And everything was amazing. So her dad and I were left flying solo. So we went to dinner by ourselves.
That clubhouse is amazing. It's just such a treat to go inside and look around. And, oh, my God, why have I had the opportunity to play Augusta National 3 times the Monday after the Masters in the, you know, media lottery? And, you know, it's just – and then the last time I played, we even were, you know, had a locker in the clubhouse, which was unbelievable. And so I can understand just how excited, you know, she's been this whole week because it's such a special place. But so talk about the first 2 rounds. They were played at Champions Gate, right? Not Champions Gate, Champions
yep.
Retreat.
Champions Retreat. It was so it's a facility that's probably 20 minutes away from Augusta National, and that facility is beautiful in itself. If the whole event had been there, but the golf course was set up really long. Very, very wet. The fairways were really wet, and then the greens were really hard, and then the wind was howling. So it was a really tough test to golf, and it was so cold. I was shivering the entire time, even though I had on every layer that you could possibly wear on a golf course.
I know Mega Gane, she said she didn't have her A game. She shot a 77 in the first round, an 80 in the second round at Champions Retreat. So she missed the cut, I think by 6 shots. She was 7 over. But what happened, you know, did she just – I mean, she's in New Jersey. She doesn't – she said she really hasn't played much, right?
She hasn't played much, but I don't think we even have – there's no excuse. I mean, we were prepared. She did some Florida trips to get ready. I think we were just served up a nice slice of humble pie, and we've got to eat it and gobble it up and reset ourselves and come home and get back to work. But the golf course is such that you can't make a mistake because there's just nowhere to make up for it later. The very next hole is asking you to make an 8 on it at all times because it was just so long, then the wind was howling so hard. It wasn't like you think about Augusta, as hard as Augusta is, there's birdies out at Augusta everywhere. And that's not the case over at Champions Retreat. So when she got herself in a hole early, she tried really hard to get out of it, which just caused more problems. So it snowballed on her a little bit, but again, it's we're going to get back to work. I think she's just fine. She's so resilient. She bounces right back from things like this. But she,
sure.
That said, she was really bummed out that she didn't get to compete on the big stage.
But she got to play Augusta National with all the competitors on Friday, right? I mean, how great is that?
That's not the worst consolation prize that you could ask for. So she put her chin up and she got right back out there and absolutely just glided down the fairways, had the best time, hit all the shots, that all the iconic shots. She birdied 12 and skipped it over the water on 16. And so she got to do this thing that was just so magical. It was just awesome.
And how did the course look to you, Augusta National?
Oh my gosh, it looks amazing. It's absolutely perfect. The azaleas are going to be ready to go for the Masters. They were blooming for us, but I think they're trying to save them a little bit. So the weather was really cold for us. We were all bundled up, but I think it's going to be in the 80s next week. So the golf course is absolutely perfect. The greens are perfect. So it's everything you would expect.
And so what next? What's next for your student, Megha Gane?
Well, we're going to go home and reevaluate a little bit, but she's really good at understanding the process, so it's not like we need to go back to the drawing board or anything. But she has a lot of tournaments lined up for this spring and this summer. She's playing in the Junior Ryder Cup. She's Junior Solheim Cup, so there's a lot of fun. The Curtis Cup is coming up, so there's all kinds of fun events for her to be playing in. Up next, I think, is the four ball, and that's in Texas. The USGA four ball is next. So she plays in all the big events, and she's getting used to this big stage, so I'm really excited for her. Even though this week was not her best showing, I'm not concerned. She has a very, very bright future ahead of her.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, just incredible. And the fact that she's a four-time drive, chip, and putt national finalist. She finished second in her age division. It's going on any moment. It's about to start at Augusta National, the drive, chip, and putt nationals. And just all that experience for a young woman at Augusta National is just unprecedented, right? It's just what opportunities for her.
Really, and it was really funny to walk around with my 17-year-old student, because she's introducing me to all of her friends that are all the members, and Mr. Ridley, of course, and Diane Murphy was there. And it's just so funny, because it's like my 17-year-old student's introducing me to some of the most influential people in golf, and I was smiling ear to ear of how proud I was of her, because she's so good and so mature in those situations, and it comes natural to her, and she just really does want to introduce you to Fred Ridley, because he's her friend. So, and it's like, wow, that's really special, Megha. You don't realize how what a neat thing this really is that you're doing. I think she does, actually. I don't mean that. She does realize it.
Were you at Augusta National? Was she at Augusta National yesterday for the championship round to watch?
Yeah, we soaked in every moment. And that's another thing that's so cool about Megha. She missed the cut by a mile at Champions Retreat, and most kids, there were some big numbers in, so she was not alone in how difficult the course condition was. We really got beat up. But most of the kids went home in a puddle of tears and just wanted to get out of there. And Megha, on the other hand, she wanted to stick around because she had one of her friends was right on the cut line. So we stayed around for 3 hours and watched the playoff because she wanted to be there to support her friend. And it just really shows, like, she understands the big picture. She was heartbroken, of course, but this really meant a lot to her, and she wanted to be there to support her friend. And then yesterday, we watched Rose Zhang, who will be Megha's teammate at Stanford, and we watched her from the first hole to the last hole, and she just really wanted to soak in the whole event because it is such a special place.
Yeah, I thought she was going to win Rose. I mean, she looks so composed. She's, you know, she was what tied for the lead going into the championship round, and then she had that triple on the 13th, and you know, she didn't really, she doesn't show that much emotion, which is a good thing when you're playing golf, but boy, these women are so good. It was such a pleasure to watch. Really.
She's so good. And actually, it's funny that Rose doesn't show emotion, because she's just a bundle of fun off the golf course, really talkative. We've gotten to know her really well this week because Mega's now going to Stanford. They've become fast friends. And she's a blast off of the – she looks so stoic on the golf course, but she goofs around and has a good time, and she's a really just also a fun 17-year-old. But it goes to show golf is such a silly, weird game, because Rose has won the last six events that she played in, and then you would think she was just going to go for a walk at Augusta National and collect her trophy, and it was turned out to not be the case, of course.
Well, you have made such a tremendous impact on so many young people, not only with golf, but with, you know, just life management overall, and you are to be congratulated, and you're the COO of First Tee Metropolitan New York. Katie, boy, you do it all. Congratulations for your incredible career.
Well, thank you. The First Tee has been a dream come true to hang my hat there, because I get to be a part of so many kids' lives and help shape them and influence them. And First Tee brings golf to kids that otherwise probably wouldn't have access to golf. So you really open a lot of kids' eyes up to this really, really amazing game. So I've been really, really happy to be at First Tee for as long as I have.
Wow, what an impact you're making, really. So Mega's going to Stanford?
She is. She signed on June 15th was the day that you could even start receiving calls. And the coach called her, and Mega said, let's get this lined up. I want to do it today. So the very day that you could call prospect students, Mega signed with Stanford. So she's really happy to have that, because she'll definitely be a four-year athlete. She's very into the education, and she'll most certainly get her degree at Stanford. So it's great.
And is she a senior now in high school?
No, she's only a junior.
She's only a junior. That's what I thought. So she has another year, but she's already committed. Well, good for her. Her future, it looks so bright. And what a great experience this week with the whole Augusta National Women's AM. And Katie, before I let you go, who are you picking to win the Masters? Put you on the spot.
Well, I don't know. Lee Westwood's playing such good golf. Should I pick Lee Westwood?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, why not? 47 years young.
That would be kind of a special story. So maybe I'll go out on a limb and pick Lee Westwood.
Hey, he's one of the contenders I mentioned earlier in the show. Thank you so much, Katie, for joining us. Really appreciate it, and continued success.
Oh, thanks for having me.
My thanks to Sid Matthew, to Katie Rudolph, and to Delaney Hefner in the studio. Have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy the Masters. And I'll talk with you next Saturday morning right here on Sports Interview with Anne Liguori.